We get to chat with our favourite African futurist every second Monday, Dr. Rose Phillips, and she joins us on the line now. We're going to look at what it takes to unlock an abundance mindset and create better futures for business, planet, society, and of course for number one. Dr. Rose, the founder and CEO of Abundance at Work, a leadership development and culture transformation company helping businesses solve for abundance at work. And you can find out more at abundanceatwork.co.za or Rose with a Z, Phillips, rosephillips.com. Today, we're diving into a pretty bold topic. Okay, so here's the question. Is your organization behaving like a psychopath? And I know that kind of sounds extreme, but bear with me. To help us unpack this, we have Dr. Rose, who apart from being a futurist, business person, and academic, is also a medical doctor. Welcome, Dr. Rose. First and foremostly, happy birthday to you.
Yeah, happy birthday to you, I should say. Happy birthday, Cape Talk. 27 years of helping South Africans be better. And
absolutely.
Know more and be more informed and educated. So well done. And hello to you and hello to the listeners.
Yeah, and you know, you're just standing off so much time for us so that we can understand things a lot better. Thank you, and may we have plenty of little journeys around the sun, Dr. Rose. But you're the professional here. Maybe you can start by giving us the psychiatric definition of a psychopath, especially since we're diagnosing organizations as such today.
Yeah, what an interesting way to start your Monday, for sure. Like, so here's the thing. Psychopathy isn't an official diagnosis in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, which is, for medical professionals, it's known as the DSM-5. It's how we diagnose psychiatric disorders. But many traits associated with it fall under what you would call antisocial personality disorder. And these traits are the following, and so you'll start getting a bit of a parallel. It's lack of empathy, it's superficial charm, impulsivity, and a disregard for others as well, being to the point actually of callousness. Now, psychopaths, they tend to engage in manipulative and deceitful behavior and don't really feel guilty for their actions. So that is a psychopath. You might not have met psychopaths in your life. Hopefully, you don't ever do so. But if you've watched enough television, you'll get sort of a personality trait of what a psychopath looks like.
Okay.
That's a psychopath.
Okay. I think we understand that in personal terms now. But how do we translate that to an organization?
Yeah, now a psychopathic organization behaves similarly, Clarence. It disregards employee well-being. It treats fines for wrongdoing as just the cost of doing business. And it focuses on profit at the expense of ethics or even safety. Now, it might charm customers and charm investors, but internally, it creates a toxic environment. Think about the case of Volkswagen. I'm sorry to bring up Volkswagen. An entire global value chain of interrelated decision makers manipulated emission data. They got caught, paid the fine, and the organization moves on. That fines ended up being a business expense. Yes, some people lost their jobs, but it was a business expense. So psychopathic organizations do exist.
So I guess just like a psychopath might manipulate people for personal gain, a company might do the same for profit.
Yeah, exactly. It's all about self-interest. Think of the space shuttle, another example, the space shuttle Columbia disaster that happened there, where engineers raised safety concerns, but they were ignored. The result was catastrophic, so people died. Organizations that silence feedback or discourage employees from speaking up create a culture of fear, and this can have disastrous consequences for people and for the business. And as I said, some of us probably, for those of us that were alive then and were seeing it on television, you saw this shuttle trying to re-enter Earth's orbit and through Earth's atmosphere, and it just blew up and people died. Now, what I do have to say, before anyone takes this as organizations are just by nature wrong, the concept of business, and this is a Milton Friedman theory, which is the basis of many businesses, the main response, this is what I actually said, the quote, the main responsibility of business is to maximize their revenue and increase returns to shareholders. Now, He said the main responsibility. He didn't say the only responsibility. People have swapped main for only, and they now say the only responsibility of business is to maximize their revenue and increase the returns to shareholders. So in essence, Clarence, organizations by their nature, by their business model, by their structure, by their outcomes, by their KPI, will act like psychopaths. And so if you want to be a caring organization that actually takes care of all stakeholders, of which actually your employees are one of the most main stakeholders, you have to work extremely hard because you're working against a business model that is almost intended to behave like a psychopath. I hope that makes sense to people.
Yeah, absolutely. So what about the hidden impacts? I mean, we saw Columbia just disintegrating. We hear about these big cases, but what happens day to day to toxic work environments?
And I'm glad that we're going in this direction because I'm not here to diagnose an organization and what psychopathy looks like and what business models look like. We can do that as an academic exercise. That's the stuff that I teach about. This is really to start talking about how does it impact the individual, right? And your question about what about those hidden impacts, I mean, this is where the hidden scars show up. Employees in toxic environments often suffer from stress, burnout, anxiety, taking extended sick leave to recover. And we're also seeing some tragic outcomes, and this is sad to say, but you see employee suicides due to toxic cultures. Bullying and harassment thrive when people feel powerless to speak up, and the human cost is enormous.
I can imagine the impact, but let's bring in some numbers here. How widespread is this issue?
Now, I've kind of set this up by saying organizations by their nature are set up in the business model to be psychopathic. So what you're going to hear is that the impact is enormous. And so let's go into the numbers. According to the World Health Organization, the statistics are staggering. Now, and I'm going to talk about very, very recent numbers. As of 2024, around 57% of employees report experiencing moderate to severe burnout, over half of employees. So, Clarence, we don't have to share or overshare, but between you and me, one of us has or will suffer burnout. It's inevitable.
Gotcha.
Globally, depression and anxiety lead to around 12 billion lost work days each year, costing the global economy around $1 trillion annually. And fewer than half of employees feel their employer genuinely cares about their well-being. Maybe it's about 48%. And it used to be 59% in 2021. And if you remember, 2021 was just after COVID, one of the worst times that the world had gone through. People felt more cared for then than they feel cared for now. Now, this lack of trust further amplifies stress and disengagement. And many of us know of people who have chosen to end their lives, which a large contributor to their stress, and I want to say the only thing, but a large contributor to their stress being a toxic work environment.
That's alarming. It's a crisis affecting performance, well-being, and even the families.
Yeah, because it doesn't stay within the work environment, right? How many times have you and I had people phone in complaining about toxic work environments, about bullying at work? This isn't just about people being tired. It's a full-blown mental health crisis. Companies lose out on productivity, creativity, and engagement. Employees disengage. They stay physically present. They're there, but they're mentally checked out, which we call presenteeism, quiet quitting. We've heard of that before. So when we meet, workers feel unsafe or they feel undervalued, they won't bring their best ideas to the table. And those are just the ones who pretend like they are coping. What about those who eventually crack and break under pressure?
Yeah, so this is, I guess, a natural point to bring in the topic of psychological safety or the lack thereof. I guess this is the inevitable consequence of a psychopathic organization. Let's start with a definition, because again, a blanket term for everything and yet no common definition.
Yeah, so right. I mean, I don't think people truly understand what psychological safety really is. And understanding it is actually a game changer, but also a term that so many myths associated with it that I think we need to debunk. So obviously, I think many people know, well, those of you that do know, Amy Edmondson is the leading figure in terms of understanding and writing about this topic. And she wrote a book. If people haven't read it yet, please go and find it. The book is called The Fearless Organization. And the Fearless Organization, in there, you get to understand a little bit about what psychological safety is and what it isn't. And an essential for the understanding of psychological safety is recognizing the definition, the right definition. It's the belief that you can speak up with ideas, concerns, or even mistakes without fear of being punished or ridiculed. That's what makes innovation, learning, and real collaboration possible. And the absence of it can be disastrous. Think Shuttle Columbia, think Volkswagen. What happens when you can't speak to power? So it is not about just being nice and everybody getting along and kumbaya. It is about the ability to speak truth to power, to say that there's something wrong, to fail and to learn, to innovate, to feel safe to do so.
So it's not just about being nice and avoiding conflict.
Yeah, exactly. That's the myth. It's not niceness, it's kindness. It's kindness and compassionate.
Yeah.
And being compassionate. It doesn't mean sugarcoating things or avoiding hard conversations. About the ability to be honest, sometimes having tough conversations as long as it's being done in a constructive way.
Chatting to Dr. Rose, our favorite African futurist at 11:20. And if there's a contribution you feel duty-bound to make, you can do it via WhatsApp on 0725671567. Happy to receive your voice or your text note. You can also call on 021-446-0567. And we'll prioritize that call. Dr. Rose, how does that relate to the mistakes employees make and then cannot admit to their organizations? That's a factor too.
Yeah. Mistakes are inevitable. But in psychologically safe workspaces, those mistakes are seen as opportunities to learn because they can correct them and improve. But if its safety is low, they hide their mistakes and they don't share new ideas because they're afraid of being blamed. And if that is the case, nobody takes a risk. And even in an environment now where sitting still means you are already being disrupted, the fact that people can't take risks is a problem for an organization. Now, of course, there are mistakes, and then there are mistakes, and then there's sabotage. Some are lessons, the inevitability of trying something different and something new, but other kind of mistakes are negligent, and the sabotage, of course, is deliberate in that. I'm not going to say that kind of mistake should be tolerated, because it shouldn't.
Maybe a provocative question, I know, but deliberately so. Why should a company care? I mean, is there an incentive to the bottom line?
Yeah, and that's many leaders ask that question. Probably many people that are leaders and sitting on this call now are asking. But I believe that freeing human potential is the key to business success, apart from being the right and the moral and the ethical thing to do. But it also directly impacts performance. Teams with high psychological safety are more innovative, they are more resilient, and they are more engaged.
Yeah.
And let's take Patagonia. Patagonia as an example, as an organization. They recognized that burnout was rampant in their culture, so they introduced things like flexi hours and some other things, and the employees thrived. Creativity, retention, and productivity all improved. And we all know about Patagonia, where the earth is its only shareholder right now. I mean, it's become a global brand. Everybody wants to work for them. That's the kind of impact psychological safety can have on the health of a business.
Yeah, that's such a great example. Dr. Rose, we've talked about how toxic work environments affect employees and performance. But let me change this a little. Some leaders out there might be thinking, why should a company care about all of this if the profits are strong?
Now, here's the thing. Even if a company profits in the short term, the long-term cost is massive. Toxicity leads to high turnover, absenteeism, and as I said before, presenteeism show up, but you're not actually doing anything. You're just parking and unparking your car. Over time, innovation drops, and so does engagement. You might make money now, but eventually that environment will stifle growth and lead to business issues, whether legal, financial, or reputational.
I guess in the same vein, Dr. Rose, there's a sentiment out there, sometimes unspoken, that employees should just toughen up and deal with the stress. How would you respond to leaders who hold that mindset?
Yeah, we're not holding back, right? Well, that's a common belief, but it's dangerous, Clarence. Expecting employees to toughen up means ignoring serious issues like burnout, stress, and harassment. And if you think about it, if an organization is set up to be psychopathic by nature of its business model, You should expect that people will be burnt out and they will be stressed. So how can you expect them to just toughen up? Over time, this destroys productivity and engagement. Sure, work might get done, but disengaged employees won't bring their best ideas to the table, and turnover costs will skyrocket. Toughening up just masks the underlying problem.
So pushing people to toughen up is really not dealing with the matter. It's ignoring the bigger picture.
Exactly. It's like putting a band-aid on a festering wound or not dealing with a spreading cancer that eventually kills you. Those who can leave will, taking all the innovation with them, and those you might want to recruit will no longer be interested in joining you. You're literally just like a woolly mammoth who doesn't realize that the ice age is already here.
Yeah, okay. At 11:25, the ice age is definitely here. And if someone like feels trapped in a toxic environment, what can they do? That's the challenge, isn't it?
Yeah. Document everything, I would say. Patterns of bullying, stress, and mistreatment should be noted. Find allies within your organization, and if possible, raise these issues with HR or through whistleblower channels if that's available to you. But if the environment is severely affecting your mental health, you need to prioritize yourself. Seek professional help, and if necessary, seriously, consider moving on. No job is worth sacrificing your well-being. And if you do not stand for anything, Clarence, I always say this to people that I mentor and when I used to lead big teams, if you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything. And on this particular point, I'm not going to mix my words. Workplace bullying, harassment, and toxicity has to stop. We cannot destroy more lives. That is unacceptable. A friend of mine said that if you tolerate toxicity, it never gets upgraded to something positive. It just means that the ability to treat you worse is there because you've just accepted it.
Yeah.
All you do is just allow for toxicity and to escalate, like a bad relationship you need to get out of. And if you need inspiration, you should listen. People should listen. I hope I'm not advertising inappropriately. People should listen to the Taylor Swift song. I don't know if you've heard it. There's a song by Taylor Swift called Tolerate It. It's about a personal relationship, but the dynamics inside an organization in a toxic work environment, a toxic work relationship, it's exactly the same. The song is called Tolerate It.
Yeah, I think those who observe this behavior should also speak up, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Elie Wiesel, he's a survivor of the Nazi concentration camps. He said that the opposite of love is not hate, it is indifference.
Yeah.
When we observe bullying or we observe workplace toxicity and we stay silent, then we are also complicit. The person suffering may be far too fragile or far too broken to speak up for themselves. They've spent all their energy just defending themselves. They have got no energy to fight left. They need our strength to break that cycle of victimhood and psychological oppression.
We got a voice note in just before we wrap, before the news headlines. Let's take a listen to this voice note. Will?
Hey, Clarence. I just wanted to leave a quick message. I'm a little bit late into this conversation. This is Will from Milnerton. Fascinating subject. And I'm not sure if you have brought it up already or have talked about it, but the great book Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell in, I think it's chapter 7, which is about the Korean Airlines and the culture in the cockpit and the seniority and how people couldn't speak to each other in any other way except politeness, and the culture caused a great deal of trouble, and in fact two or three major crashes because junior pilots were not allowed to overrule senior pilots. And then the same thing happened in the worst aviation crash in history, as well as I recall, in the Canary Islands, when the KLM pilot overruled a young co-pilot and decided to take off at Lanzarote and Canary Islands and hit into another jumbo jet. And that was, that speaks to this whole culture of not being able to communicate and speak up in a sort of toxic way because of seniority. So just Not sure if you guys have discussed that already.
Dr. Rose?
Yeah, what Will is talking about here very specifically, and thank him, really thank him for bringing those additional examples to the fore, is really about what he calls that toxic politeness. We are so polite that we can't speak up. And because we can't speak up, somebody ends up potentially losing their life. Now, you can say, okay, the aviation industry and the space industry and the car industry, those are exceptions. It happens in hospitals, where doctors make mistakes, but nurses can't speak up, pharmacists can't speak up and say, actually, doctor, something is wrong here, because they just can't speak up. So it doesn't just happen in these very, very high-risk environments. It happens everywhere. It can happen even in a retail environment, in the way that a shop floor is run. And maybe some of those mistakes don't end up people losing lives, but people end up losing livelihoods, lifestyles, toxic relationships get brought into the family, gender-based violence happens because you take your frustration out on your family. The consequences are enormous.
Well, we're gonna have to wrap it there, Dr. Rose. We appreciate your time and your insights. I can't believe the statistics that you shared with us. I think there's a lot of thinking and action that must go into the proliferation of toxic working spaces, and of course, clearly the presence of psychopathic employers and organizations. Always something that we should think about. That's the contribution from Dr. Rose, our favorite African future.
You are with Cape Talk.
Views and news with Clarence Ford.
And because it's our birthday, we want more of her. We've asked Dr. Rose Phillips for a couple of additional minutes because there are folks that want to talk about the issue that you have raised. So welcome back, Dr. Rose Phillips. Mac in Athlone is on the line. He's a former executive bullied at work. Mac, welcome.
Hi. Thank you, Clarence. Thanks for the time. I just want to say that, you know, this concept of bullying happens at every level, even at the most executive level. I was the chief information officer at a financial services company, doing well, was there for 3 or 4 years. And then the CEO met his friend, and I call this the privileged relationship, and the CEO brings his friend in. And suddenly I wasn't doing well, and I wasn't delivering and everything else. And through that conversation, I was told that I'm not having a good, positive relationship with his friend. And this friend came on board without a procurement process, without understanding what we are and what we need. But due to his criticism of my performance, you know, I was then told I'm not good enough, so it was quite a tough journey, but they bullied me out of the job.
Yeah, Dr. Rose, you want to respond to Mac?
Yeah, I really am sorry to hear this, but I am equally also not surprised that someone as senior as Mac also experiences this, and I'm grateful to him for raising it. And this, I think what people need to understand, this is what I try to say up front, psychopathic individuals operate within psychopathic organizations. It doesn't mean that the individuals are psychopathic. It just means that an organization is set up to require of you to behave in a certain way. And so there are certain CEOs, et cetera, whose only interest is to look after their own self-interest or to build a trusted group of people around them that will make them look good.
Yeah.
And ethics doesn't matter, because the only thing that is being measured by your shareholder, even if it's a private company, is actually just how much money you make and whether you keep a certain group of people happy. And everybody else is just an input cost. And this is what happens at all levels, exactly what Max says, and this is what happened to him. And so the work that needs to be done is to recognize that organizations by nature are set up to operate in a psychopathic way. And so you need to look at the operating model. You have to look at the culture. You have to look at the values. You have to find leaders that by their nature operate ethically, even if it sometimes might go against the KPIs that the organization has. You have to look at the KPIs and measure things like engagement and make those things matter to the compensation of the CEO and the senior people. And then customers need to walk away and put pressure, just like shareholders are starting to put pressure on issues of environment. So customers must put pressure on issues of workplace toxicity, and best employees must do the same. So thank you for that, and I'm sorry to hear that that has happened to you, and I think that you are better off finding a place where you can be successful elsewhere and build something else with people that are your tribe.
Thank you, Mac, for that sharing. There's a voice note or two, and we want to play that back to you, Dr. Rose. Let's take a listen.
Good morning, Clarence. It's all and well to speak about workplace bullying and toxicity. What do you do if that's your only source of income and if you stand up for yourself, you get fired?
Yeah.
You lose your house, you're unable to feed your family. What do you do? But hell, you stood up for yourself. And you see, the thing is, the employers know it. That's why they belittle, scream, yell, insult the employees, and just carry on.
Yep.
Because they know you won't do anything, because work is scarce.
Yeah. It's,
yeah.
It's
go ahead.
No. It's you're the professional. I'm listening.
This is why we talk about these things, because we actually, I think sometimes now, at this point in time, we have to publicly shame, because she's absolutely right. Some people are completely trapped and they have to put up with it. And that is the sad reality of the lives of so many people. And there is no silver bullet, right? There is unfortunately no silver bullet. Hopefully there are people who can walk away and they can find something new. Now, I'm going to say something that sounds a little bit coming from an elitist person, but I started life in Kensington also with very little, and so indulge me to be able to say this. When you are psychologically torn down and spend your entire life as a victim, you actually don't believe that you can go and find success somewhere else.
Yeah.
And I know it's hard to do so, but for me, the best advice I can give someone is start a little side hustle. Think about a hobby that you have that you can turn into income. Bake cakes if you have to. Find a way to find your strength back. Create for yourself alternative income opportunities. Hmm. Even if you're an entrepreneur for a few moments, build something so that you can get your strength back. Because trust me, when you are strong again and you can feel self-confident, you can actually go and put yourself out in the job market in a little bit of a different way. So don't just accept it. Maybe you have to stay in that environment, but at the same time, try and build something for yourself, even if it is from your own little kitchen. That's why I don't believe in having single any longer.
Dr. Rose, you say name and shame, and you're not saying take aim at the brand. You're saying take aim at the CEO. Ultimately, that's where the problem is it not?
Yes. Yeah. No, we have to. And you know what happens is Mac is probably not the only person suffering. There are many others that can't actually say anything at all. And so those of us that have the ability to speak up and say something and sometimes walk away, ultimately it becomes such a pressure cooker for an organization that they are, in a sense, almost forced to change. Once again, there is no silver bullet.
Yeah.
But unless you take power back, even if it is hard, it is never going to change.
It's about caring organizations. It is about ethical organizations. And the tendency is more narcissistic. It is maybe just the reality that we're going to have to deal with. But we've got to take aim at CEOs in order for them to understand that responsibility. As much as the bottom line is their responsibility, so is that culture in the workspace. Got to wrap maybe with your closing words, Dr. Rose.
Yeah, speaking truth to power, exactly what you've just said. Speaking truth to power is critical so that we can create supportive environments for all. If we have ethical and caring organizations, we're going to have an ethical and caring society. And it isn't natural, because organizations are set up to be psychopathic. So we're going to have to work at it. And if you are listening today and you're recognizing psychopathic traits in your organization that play out in toxic work environments for you or others, it might be time to ask tough questions, push for change, and if you can, even if you just start with a little side hustle, build up your own strength again.
Yeah, it's a very necessary conversation to have. And Oscar's got a question. He says, well, essentially, we can't take your call, Oscar. We have to go to Gavin Kelly in a short while, but he suggests that family-run businesses are the worst. Oscar, we'll create another opportunity for this conversation. Clearly, it's necessary. How do we take aim at the CEOs, their responsibilities, the culture of the organization? How do we take aim? And maybe that's a question for another day. Thank you, Dr. Rose Phillips. We always appreciate your time,
thank
your
you.
Insights, and your wisdom.